It's showtime.
Conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running as we, day by day, hour by hour, bid farewell to the grim, gray realities of February. Yes, after today, there's only four more days of it left. We'll say goodbye to it on Saturday night into Sunday morning, and then start counting down days until the first blessed day of spring, the vernal equinox. Hi, I'm Bob, and it is Titanic Tuesday on the horn. If you would like to be part of the merry, madcap, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia conversation that takes place in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific time, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern, then run on by, head on .live, click on chat room. If you've never done it before, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and you will be eagerly and joyfully welcomed by the likes of Anatole and Bill and Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has folded space to become Man Cave. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And being as it's Titanic Tuesday, we've got some Titanic intellect to examine. But, of course, every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, because we don't have any sponsors. We don't have any corporate money coming in that makes this radio operation possible. No, you know the litany by now. No vacuum cleaners that pick up bowling balls or drop the said bowling balls on Swedish mattresses made of foam developed by NASA. No, none of that. No wavy gravy radios. No steel or molybdenum steel or tin buildings. None of that crap that they hustle to the credulous. No stupid beats. No freeze-dried meats. Nope. Just the grim. The determination among a merry band, a happy few, to keep independent progressive broadcasting alive and kicking in a sea of corporate swill. Yeah. So that's how this all. The magic continues to occur. So thanks going out to our subscriber for the 25th day, subscribers for the 25th day of the month. Thanks to James in Spain, and thanks to Mark. Thanks, both of you, very, very kindly for being partial sponsors of the program and helping to make sure that independent liberal broadcasting continues for another day, another week, another month, and hopefully another year, maybe another decade. You know, we are working on our second decade of independent, liberal, progressive broadcasting. So far, so good, Brother Deacon. Asa lets me know, hot on both Trump-tanic streams. And as Sparky notes in the chat room, the last pageant of the 2020 race, maybe, tonight? Yeah. That would, and supposedly this is going to be a real steel cage death match, Donnybrook. You know, for pity's sakes. I mean, that's the way they were pitching it in the for-profit media today. Will Joe Biden come out swinging at that dirty fucking hippie commie, Bernie Sanders? Will he prove that he is the man to make moderate hearts go all pitter-pat? Oh, God. By the way, a correction I got from Joy in Ann Arbor. It turns out that I was misshapen last night. Yeah, I made a mistake one time, but I thought I was wrong one time, but I was mistaken. Hattie McDaniel did win the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress. It was weird. The list I looked at said that Olivia de Havilland did, and she didn't. And by the way, speaking of advertising, lest anyone be misinformed, Brother Deacon Asa says, thanks for the correction to Joy in Ann Arbor. Speaking of advertising, I see that TuneIn has dialed the ads up to 11 inside of their TuneIn app, even for folks like myself who paid to buy the so-called premium version of the app. Therefore, the best way to receive the live program ad-free is to point your browser to headon.live. Alien Jimmy down in New Zealand, I think, up over, down under, Lee in New York have both told me that they're having some trouble getting the headon.live stream. And I've heard from a couple of others as well. So I'm not entirely sure what it is, but, you know, now that I know it and now that Brother Deacon Asa knows it, it will very likely be sorted out. But again, if you just, and on a mobile device, headon.live works just fine and dandy. And as well or better than TuneIn, you know, without the ads. And a heck of a lot less latency, by the way. Thanks for the heads up on that, Brother Deacon. It's been a fairly busy-ish day. Our eldest is sick and feeling icky enough that Agnes, otherwise known as Mama, felt her inner bat signal go on, and Ferg needed a meds refill. So this morning we took off on the Great Circle route of central West Virginia-ish. Left here, went to Summersville, picked up the script, took a minute to talk with the pharmacist, who is a big, 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 big Mountaineers fan. Remember, God created Mountaineer basketball to beat the optimism out of the faithful. Jesus, God, it was painful. It's funny. If you're a North Carolina fan or a Duke fan or, God knows, a Kentucky fan, you expect to win every damn game, and especially, and you know, you guys know who you are. If Kentucky happens to lose a game, it's just about cause for a day of national mourning. In what was described by the old chief of Conestoga as that dark and bloody ground. You know, over losing one game. Whereas if you're a Mountaineer fan, which has its own respectable history of basketball, you get all the hope and optimism and dreams ground right out of you. And against Texas last night, it was pitiable. It was just awful. My pharmacist said, you know, I usually watch the whole game no matter what, but last night I turned it off with about 4 minutes to go. And that sort of captured it all. But anyway, we left Summersville and drove northwards on 19 to get on 79 to then go south. I dropped off Agnes, played with the grand puppies for a couple of minutes, and then turned around and headed home. I stopped in a little community that had a McDonald's and called home and checked in with Margie and said, hey, McDonald's or Taco Bell? She goes, McDonald's would be good. I said, I know your brother will want McNuggets. What do you want? She says, well, you know, I'd like to have the quarter pounder with cheese combo. I said, consider it done. We don't eat a lot of fast food around here, and so it's kind of a treat. And so I did the thing where, you know, you go through the drive-thru. And one of the more memorable lines out of a career of memorable lines for Joe Pesci, you know, am I funny? Do I amuse you? You know, from Goodfellas. But from one of those, that series where Mel Gibson plays the wacko psycho cop. It was the second one, I think. Which one was the one where Danny Glover was sitting on a bomb on the toilet? Never mind. But one of his more memorable lines, and it sticks with me because it's so real. They fuck you at the drive-thru. They fuck you at the drive-thru. And they fucked me at the drive-thru at McDonald's. Because, you know, you're thinking you want to get home and everything. Jesus, how complicated can be an order of McNuggets, fries, a drink, and a quarter pounder with cheese and a filet of fish be? Well, I got home and there were two filets of fish, a 20-piece McNuggets, a 10-piece McNuggets, a large order of fries. Got the Coke. No quarter pounder with cheese. Lethal Weapon. Thank you, Anatole. Thank you kindly. Lethal Weapon. Oh, God. So, and it's too far away to turn around, and by the time you sort it out, it's too late. I almost think that there's some bean counter inside the McDonald's organization who says, you know, if we fuck up every seventh order, we can increase shareholder profits by 0.0001 cents. And the board of directors look at each other with knowing eyes and smiling faces, and they harumph at each other. And so it is decided that let's do it on every fourth order and get that and drop that last decimal place. McDonald's. Yeah, I know. Sparky says, always check the bag before you leave the window, Bob. I know, but I feel terrible sitting there at the window when, the cars are lining up behind you and they're hungry hillbillies who are getting hungrier by the moment, and you didn't want to be there in the first place, and you got some serious, McShame going on. Tech note, courtesy of Brother Deacon Asa. Would anyone who is having trouble with the website please contact me at connect@headon.live. connect@headon.live. And hopefully a Brother Deacon will be able to sort out just what the hell's going on. That's another weird one. Darlene in Connecticut says, not true. I keep getting tune-in ads when I go to headon.live and click the play button. I have to refresh the site, and that eliminates the ad from playing again for the most part. Yeah, it's that for the most part that it always, right. The ongoing quest for new references for the orange man baby squatting in the White House continues. Dennis from Columbus points out, Dennis's Donald Dumbass data download, Fox News favorite fanboy, Putin's POTUS puppet, POTUS, Prince of the Uninformed Suckers. Well, now, Donald Trump, P.S., I'm predicting that if the orangutan gets reelected, he'll start pushing for a constitutional amendment that would allow, would permit presidents to run for a third and maybe even fourth term, and I'm sure he'd like one of his sons to follow him in the office, a Trump dynasty, God help us all. Yeah, I know. I look back to those Halcon days when dedicated liberals and progressives yelled things like, Clinton dynasty, Clinton dynasty, brooga, 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 Clinton dynasty, America will die, Clinton dynasty, and ran off and voted for Jill Stein. I remember those days. ABCD, anybody but Crooked Donald. And continuing, Dennis says, Trump, as in T period, R period, U period, MP, M period, P period, totally repugnant, uncouth, malodorous piece of shit. That, by God, gets one of these. Nice long jingle. Now we've got to do our memory exercise here. Totally repugnant, uncouth, malodorous piece of shit. Make that a thing. Yeah, okay, thanks for rubbing it in, Scott in San Diego. Grim gray realities of February. It's sunny and 78 at Shea Guru. I'm slathering sea and ski on the squirrel and me. You know what? That needs to be somehow, Scott, slathering sea and ski on the squirrel and me needs to be, it profoundly needs to be a line in a song. It does. It does. Because, I mean, that's going pro. Slathering sea and ski on the squirrel and me. I was slathering sea and ski on the squirrel and me. It's definitely, it scans and it's got a ring to it. I know. Stephen, New York. Check your bag. They have these things called parking spaces where you can stop out of the way of traffic to check your bag for your food. Yeah, but Steve, this ain't civilized New York. This is crazy ass West Virginia. It's like the road company of Left 4 Dead, and it, No. Just no. You've got a vote of confidence, Scott, from Ralphs in Wisconsin. Slathering sea and ski on the squirrel and me. Yeah. There was a little bit of blue sky today. I mean, from here to Summersville and almost all the way to Charleston, the fogs and the mists were just rising out of the hills. If there'd been a wolf howl somewhere along the way, I would have expected the shade of Marty Feldman to declare, "There, werewolf, there wolf, there castle." There are times when this places in this state just look downright spooky. But eventually, the clouds broke, and there was a little bit of blue sky. And when it's in such short supply, a little bit of blue sky can do everything in the world toward rehabilitating a seasonal funk. And maybe that's what happened. Maybe that's why I didn't make. Maybe it wasn't zombies or anything like that. Maybe that's why I didn't check the bag at McDonald's. I was just overcome by a reminder that, you know, this is a blue planet and not a gray one. Note, Lady B got her state income tax back. It's not much because I ain't got kids or house to write off, but I'm able to double what I usually give on my payday. The rest is truly going towards bills I desperately need to pay, but if I didn't give you some of this, I wouldn't be paying you tribute for what you do. No long missives for the moment, but I'm sure something will happen that'll inspire me again, so keep up the good work, and most importantly, keep the faith. You is kind, you is smart, and you is important, so say we all. Signed, Lady, I might order in tonight, B. Well, thank you, Lady B. Thank you very, very kindly. That is a big, big help, considering where we stand. You know, we're trying to finish February, and let's see, we finished last night at 295, so if you add to that, so we're at 625 and a total of 955 to finish the week. And remember, program note, it's going to be a short broadcast week. Although there's about a 50% chance that it'll be a normal length broadcast week because I don't know if I'm going to be able to go. Everything looked like I was all set to be able to go, but now with Agnes not here on the premises, I might not be able to get out. So we'll see. But anyway, you slice it. To finish February, we're at 955. So thank you, Lady B, for getting us started. And we'll just count down from there. Thank you very kindly. And I hope, you know, I hope we can finish February to the good. Meanwhile, down in Shreveport, Jack writes, I had to turn on the air conditioner today. Finally, some partially sunny days for the last one or two days or so. And, of course, this is Mardi Gras, Fat Tuesday, is it not? Yeah, I believe it is. So, traditionally, tomorrow, Jesus goes back in his burrow and doesn't come out for six more weeks. Is that it? I forget the theology. And Steve in New York notes, Dame B ordering in. It is Fat Tuesday, so splurge, Lady B, splurge. Ah, well played, Sparky. I've been thinking about something along those lines ever since the trip started. A little visual. See, this is the kind of stuff that you miss when you're not in the chat room. You get things like Sparky posting the meme showing Gorky Pig.
We're done, folks. The coronavirus will be gone by spring.
But him stepping off Air Force One, wearing a war bonnet, saying,
okay, where are the Indians?
I've been waiting the whole trip for him to make some sort of a reference to Apaches or Comanches or Cherokees. Yep, says Jack, Ash Wednesday, Lent, charcoal crosses on foreheads. It's also charming. What kind of self-respecting God would expect you to walk around with barbecue ash on your head when there was no pulled pork anywhere to be found? I learned long ago, says Ron in Raleigh, I used to work at the local Mickey D's corporate office when drive-thrus were first being added to the stores. I learned early on that going through the drive-thrus was a crapshoot. I never go through them, even if there's no line. Not to malign our friends from south of the border, the drive-thru is often manned by folks that English is not their native tongue. Let the frustration and confusion ensue. Well, I can tell you this, Ron. This drive-thru was man-personed by someone for whom English was her native language, if we're still calling what's spoken hereabouts English. But I was instructed upon having paid, I was instructed to have a blessed day. Have blessed day. That's more the Appalachian stuff. Have blessed day. And I pulled up to the second window, and another individual opened another window and looked at me and said, you the Coke? I said, among other things, never suspecting that, yeah, well, but it was. Flavio, Chris Matthews, subject line, did that sound like a sincere apology to you? Any apology at all? Yeah, not much of one. We discussed that toward the end of the program last night. It didn't have much in the way of apology about it whatsoever. Albert, if tune-in problems, again, use connect@headon.live and let Brother Deacon Asa know. And Jimmy points out, sometimes it's better to walk in than do the drive-thru, sometimes faster. And you know what? I usually do. But then again, I don't usually go to McDonald's. And I was just doing what every American, you know, just, oh, fuck it. I don't want to get out of the car. I just did. They fuck you at the drive-thru. And sometimes they fuck you on the delivery, too. And I think that's even more frustrating if you use a Grubhub or a DoorDash or something like that. And you've already paid, and you're waiting, and they bring it to you, and it's like, son of a gun! I experienced it. We don't do much of that around here, because there isn't much of that around here. But I tried it out down in Florence. And the one time I ordered from, it was called Grub South, they completely screwed it up. And to compensate, they gave me Popeyes gave me a two-piece chicken dinner, which it was too near me leaving there to even be able to collect. Yeah, precisely, Steve, in New York, and sometimes you just want to get home. And that was today. Just wanted to get home. So that's the day, and that's the day here in Mount Colby Gone. And it being Titanic Tuesday, Trump-tanic Tuesday, and all of that, I thought it might be, I didn't want to let all this go by without making mention of something that has to be distressing for the people in Santa Clara County, California, because one of their reservoirs has been ordered shut down by the federal government. It's hard to look at the situation and not wonder if there isn't a little bit of skullduggery involved, seeing as how Nitwit Nero has been getting his hate on against California for a bit. But probably not, because the science behind the story goes back pre-Trump regime. But it gets kind of droughty, as Sparky has pointed out, in California. And so the feds have ordered that a major reservoir in, what is it, Santa Clara County? Be drained. And the scientists who suggested it be drained don't want to waste much time in doing it. We're talking about the Anderson Reservoir. It's the biggest reservoir in Santa Clara County. And it's going to be completely drained beginning on October 1st of this year. The reason being that the earthen dam that holds back the reserve of water, hence the term reservoir, is likely to crumble into a pile of dirt and mud and rock if an earthquake strikes nearby. It is 240 feet tall. It was built in 1950. Sits east of Highway 101 between Morgan Hill and San Jose. And yes, I do know the way to San Jose. And the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC, that has regulatory control of dams, said, and I quote, "It is unacceptable to maintain the reservoir at an elevation higher than necessary when it can be reduced." And thereby reduce risk. And they're talking about, an engineering consultant in 2008, December 2008, which would be shortly before, that's right at the end of the reign of error. That engineering consultant said that a 6.6 magnitude quake centered on the Calaveras Fault directly at the reservoir, or a 7.2 magnitude quake on the Richter scale just 1 mile away would cause the 240-foot high dirt and rock dam to fail, to collapse, to stop being a dam. And they went further and did the calculations, and they said that if the reservoir was full, like during a wet winter, and the dam collapsed, a wall of water 30 feet high would surge into downtown Morgan Hill, California, within 14 minutes. And it would be 8 feet deep into San Jose within 3 hours. and that there would, as a result, be a grave risk to the lives of thousands and thousands of people. And the problem is that although the biggest, the strongest quake ever to happen on the Calaveras Fault is 6.5 in 1911, the USGS, the Geological Survey, says that it is capable of producing an earthquake of up to 7.2. Back in the 1950s when they built this thing, according to test borings that were done in 2008, the dam was not built on solid bedrock. It's got some sand and gravel under it. And in a big quake, that stuff turns to, well, somewhere between straight-up liquid and, you know, gritty pudding. And then, goodbye dam, goodbye lake, goodbye Morgan Hill, goodbye chunk of San Jose. And they tried to avert it, because this is going to be a giant pain in the ass for people in Santa Clara County and downstream. They tried to come up with a half a loaf approach, and said, "Well, okay, what we can do is we won't let it get more than 45% full." That was what the Santa Clara Water District's plan was. This past October, FERC said, no, you done screwed up. And since that was October of 2019, that may be the vindictive maggot side of all of this. "Your actions to date do not demonstrate an appropriate sense of urgency regarding the interim conditions at the project." A wall, so when I read that that phrase, a wall of water 35 feet high, it tickled something in the memory reserves, the memory reservoir of my own brains. And then I realized what it was. Now, this is just a puny little dam that's 240 feet tall. This reservoir in Santa Clara County. That is nothing compared to the Brushy Fork impoundment in western Raleigh County, West Virginia. The Brushy Fork impoundment is bigger than Hoover Dam outside Las Vegas. Hoover Dam, of course, an engineering marvel of the era of the Great Depression and the time when America had, even though it was economically on its knees and begging for relief, still had a sense of can-do about us. That nothing could stop us, that we would rise above challenges. Well, when the Brushy Fork impoundment was built, it wasn't built out of concrete like the Hoover Dam was. It was built on the cheap by a coal company whose CEO considered that anything that did not involve actual coal being moved out of actual mountains to be a giant howling waste of time. And so they put only as much into the Brushy Fork impoundment as they needed to get by and get the compliant souls over at the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection and maybe the loyal Bushies at the Army Corps of Engineers to go along with them. And so they built it. And it is, in fact, bigger than Hoover Dam. And it has a capacity of some 9.8 billion gallons. Not of fresh, clean water like the reservoir in Santa Clara County, but of toxic waste. A sickening soup. A stew of coal remnants and byproducts and chemicals used to clean coal. A little bit of water. Yeah. Now here's the fun part. The federal government, even though the reservoir in California is only at 29% full and holds some 26,133 acre feet of water, federal government says, no, this is way too dangerous to human life. Way too dangerous. If an earthquake comes, you're fucked. And we wouldn't want all of those thousands of at-risk American citizens downstream from that dam to have their lives put at risk. That is unacceptable. We will not tolerate that being done to the people of California and Santa Clara County. Well, so there are engineering reports on the Brushy Fork impoundment, too. And the engineering reports on the Brushy Fork impoundment say that when, not if, but when, that pile of dirt and rock finally gives way, that a wall, not of water, we're not talking about 8 feet in San Jose, we're talking about a narrow mountain river valley of the Big Coal River. And a wall of water somewhere between 45 and 60, not water, poison, a wall of toxic waste somewhere between 45 and 60 feet tall will go roaring down the Coal River Valley all the way from western Raleigh County through Boone County, and it will eventually meet the Kanawha River a little bit west of Charleston, in a community called St. Albans. There won't be anything left alive after that. Not wherever that wall of toxic waste goes. Because, again, there are no buildings 45 to 60 feet tall, 4.5 to 6 stories tall between the Brushy Fork impoundment and St. Albans, West Virginia. It'll be sort of a coal goo Vesuvius. Now, in a disaster like that, one of the things that you absolutely have to critically have is your first responders. And that's one of those times when you want a professional law enforcement agency who can help to maintain order in a chaotic situation. That's too damn bad. Because when the massive, and it ain't going to be any 45 to 60 feet tall coming out of the Brushy Fork impoundment when that thing gives way, it's going to be a tsunami of sludge, a tsunami of coal sewage. First thing it's going to hit is the local state police barracks. So, oh well. Well, you know what? Let's not overemphasize. The state police barracks may not be the first thing that gets hit. No, hell no. The first thing that gets hit may be the Head Start. Babies, children, meeting their doom in a gigantic tide of profit, of poison that's had the profit pulled out of it. Oh, but I can hear it already. Yeah, but Bob, it's not like you've got earthquakes in West Virginia now, is it? And we don't very often. We get a few here and there, especially with the fracking-induced quakes. But here's the fun part. Even though we don't get a lot of earthquakes, right next to the Brushy Fork impoundment is a mountaintop removal site. And they blast at will around that pathetically, hastily constructed pile of dirt and rock. In fact, when the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch pointed out to the WVDEP that blasting next to an earthen dam might not be the smartest thing they could do, the folks at the WVDEP responded by saying, well, we was a-looking on the Google, and there on the Google, we found us an article what done said that sometimes blasting next to a dam made out of dirt and rock could actually be good for a dirt and rock dam. Good for it. Good for it. So that's why we ain't doing nothing about it. And, of course, there are precedents for these kinds of disasters. If anyone wants to know what would happen if the Brushy Fork impoundment broke through, Steve in New York points out, look up Aberfan, A-B-E-R-F-A-N, the Aberfan disaster. That was Wales. You don't even have to go across the pond. No, hell no. Because it happened in 1972, not far away from where the Brushy Fork impoundment is. Pittston Coal Company. Hundreds of lives lost. Thousands displaced. And when the lawsuits were filed, the Pittston Coal Company said, act of God, y'all. God made it rain. God made that rain over top that dam. God made that dam collapse. God damn. Yeah. Buffalo Creek. The Buffalo Creek disaster. And so right there, in a single story, in a single comparison, is a very nearly perfect example of what separates real Americans from, you know, hillbillies. Because that little puny-ass reservoir's got to be drained, damn it. And I agree. Probably should. It was negligently constructed. They built an earthen rock dam on on an unsolid foundation? Needs to be drained, demolished, and rebuilt. But, of course, we need to remember that this here is Merca. And so there won't be any rebuilding money. Not anymore. Because gone are the days of we can do anything, we're America. Norma Camacho, the Water District CEO, said, said with these new requirements, we expect to see an impact to groundwater basins that are replenished with water released from the reservoir, including South County and Southern San Jose. Staff is already exploring other sources of water that will have to come from outside of the county. While residents have done an excellent job of conserving water since 2013, another drought during this time frame could require everyone to significantly decrease their water use. Ms. Camacho further said that when they drain the reservoir in 7 months, wildlife downstream in Coyote Creek will be killed, including but not limited to the endangered steelhead trout, amphibians, reptiles. And Coyote Creek flows out of the dam through downtown San Jose and into San Francisco Bay. And there is reason to believe that California may be heading for more drought conditions. But there it is. The danger is real, and so we're just going to have to kind of say, fuck the endangered steelhead trout, which kind of puts hillbillies on a par with steelhead trout. Because every day since that dam opened at Brushy Fork, we've rolled the dice. Every day, hoping that the damn thing doesn't fail. There's another similar dam. It's called the Shoemate Dam. And it sits towering atop what used to be an elementary school. And there was absolutely no contention whatsoever about the fact that that thing was leaking at the toe. Oh, and by the way, the geniuses that allowed Brushy Fork to be constructed did so knowing that that entire area where the water was, where the toxic waste would be, had already been undermined. All the coal had been dug out from underneath where the sludge was going to sit. Please believe me when I tell you that that sludge is heavier than water. That whole mountain complex had been undermined. Nothing left there but pillars. It's a honeycomb for hundreds of feet inside there. And the relevant authorities said, yeah, but I tell you what, coal brings jobs, so fuck them people down below. Yeah, fuck them little kids down there at the Head Start, and fuck them state police, and fuck everybody from Whitesville to St. Albans. It's not like they're real American human beings like they's from California or something. Of course, California would never tolerate something as destructive and toxic as mountaintop removal. Oh, hell no. But if you're a resource colony that's not really as American as other parts of the country, losing every living thing for 40 or 50 miles and having the after effects be just a giant Superfund cleanup site. That's just the cost of doing business. That's just what the our corporate betters require in order to satisfy their yearning, aching need for more wealth. And thus has it ever been. Oh, well. Yeah, hopefully the Brushy Fork Dam won't collapse. Hope in one hand, you know what to do in the other. See which one fills up first. But I hope they can get some sort of resolution in Santa Clara County. Because they need that water. Initial plans are to bring stored water from underground at Semitropic Water Storage District in Kern County to make up the difference. They're also sponsoring a bill in the California Assembly introduced last week. Permits would be expedited to rebuild the dam. And there just wasn't sufficient money in 21st century America to say, okay, we're just going to take it down and then we're going to build it back up. No. Of course not. Because we're talking about, you know, $500 million or so. You know, about the same kind of money that Michael Bloomberg is spending on his presidential ambitions so far. Yeah. How about that, though? Isn't it amazing? Isn't it amazing that two parts of this country can be treated so disparately? I wonder what the average income is downstream from the dam in California. Bet it's a hell of a lot higher than it is downstream from the Brushy Fork impoundment. Well, that's not a good sign. Sparky says, we had our first wildfire of the year in the last 2 days. It's under control now. Well, hey, you're 56 days into a brand new year, and it's your first wildfire. I mean, wait a minute, that's probably not a good thing either, is it? No. Yes, of course. Thank you for the reminder, Jimmy. Earthquakes are, in fact, caused by the Titanic plates. Mm-hmm. The movement of the Titanic plates. Yeah, precisely. Wondering about the economic... Yeah. Sparky says, it's fucking Silicon Valley, Bob. Yeah, I know. Whereas where the Brushy Fork impoundment is, that's just the Coal River Valley. And Americans in the Coal River Valley don't matter nearly as much as Americans in Silicon Valley. I mean, you could probably purchase most of Whitesville, West Virginia, if not all of it, for the price of a 40-year-old three-bedroom ranch house on a postage stamp size of ground in San Jose, right? Sunnyvale, somewhere like that. Yeah. In point of fact, we did. Scott in San Diego wants to know, did West Virginia feel the 2011 5.8 magnitude earthquake whose epicenter was in Louisa County, Virginia, near Richmond? As I recall, it shook up a rather large part of the East Coast, at least to some extent, owing to the rocky geology of the Mid-Atlantic region. Yeah, we felt it. We felt a few others, too. We're not absolutely immune to them. Oh, and by the way, the Brushy Fork impoundment, that's just the biggest one. There are 200 others in this state. And you have to assume that they were constructed with the same dedication to the profit principle as Brushy Fork was and Shoemate. That is little, if, well, no. Towering concern for profits, which means significantly reduced concerns for quality or safety. Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Ron in Raleigh says, I'm sure, absolutely sure, that the folks responsible for the shoddy construction of these edifices will be held responsible and punished for their malfeasance. Yeah, no. No. I don't recall any gallows being built or firing squads and brick walls or electric chairs or gas chambers or horizontal crucifixion tables for the geniuses who built the Buffalo Creek impoundment. And by the way, Brushy Fork's 9.8 billion gallons. Buffalo Creek was just a couple of hundred million. That's all. Rusty says he just looked on Google Earth at the dam there in Santa Clara County. He said they built high-end homes right up to the face of the dam. I counted many swimming pools. Many machines on X. Not surprising. Money will do what money does. That's true. Megan asks, hey, didn't Trump campaign on securing the infrastructure? Oh, it's infrastructure week about every other week at the White House these days. Draining the dam is his idea of securing it, right up there with raking the forest to prevent forest fires. Somebody please tell this man to leave the thinking to someone whose brain isn't Swiss cheese. Oh, I know. Well, here I am in India. Where are the Mohawks? Isn't it sad that's not even a little bit over the top? As an aside, Jack in Shreveport says, as you use the term real Americans, I recalled a thought that had run through my mind recently, and that was how I heard Bernie's not a real Democrat in a much more malicious light. I didn't just view it as people whining about how money flows in the Democratic Party or whining about check marks beside someone's party affiliation rather than standing for the substance of what made the Democratic Party a savior for so many Americans in poverty. I know. Look, there's bigotry attached to statements like that. Like when maggots say that that the real America starts at least 400 miles from either coast. That if you live in Talibandiana, you're a real American, but if you live in Brooklyn, you're not. That if you live in Sister Fister, South Carolina, you're a real American, but if you live in Seattle, you're not. Yeah, that real thing. Mm-hmm. And we are, somehow or another, we wound up being an hour into the program now. And I want to thank Lady B for getting us started in finishing out the week. I know that's a tall number for what we've got left, but it's mainly because I just did that because, well, we've got tonight and tomorrow night, if in fact I get to go and see Mike and Kathy and Molly. Yeah, so where are we? Yeah, we got 9:35 to go to finish February. 9:35. Lady B got us started this evening. Thank you so much, Lady B. And, you know, it'd be great to, you know, if we can start out by breaking under the $900 mark, and then we'll go from there. You know, I've tried, I haven't talked a lot about the coronavirus business. Because there wasn't very much known about it. The Chinese government was, I think, safe to say, less than forthcoming about it, and that's what made it worse to begin with. There's reason to believe that the virus, while we can't say it has run its course in China, we can say that they're claiming that new cases are on the decline. But they're not declining elsewhere. One of the chief, epidemiologists in Iran has been stricken with the virus. The mortality rate for this thing is around 2 to 2.5%. That means somewhere between two and three people out of every 100 who get it will shuffle off this mortal coil. Compare that with the mortality rate for the flu, which is around 0.1. 0.1. And the flu kills tens of thousands worldwide every year. One of the things that that indicates is that the coronavirus is not from an evolutionary standpoint, a very successful virus. It will have to mutate further so as not to kill its hosts quite so effectively. Because it needs something to... It needs living bodies. Being a virus, in order to grow and spread and make other little viruses, you know. Oh, hey, thank you, Jack in Shreveport. We are now down under the $900 mark. Thank you very kindly, Jack. So we're on our way. $895 to go to finish the week. Thank you so much. Thanks for joining in with Lady B this evening. You are both in good company. But there are some, history doesn't repeat, but it does rhyme. And while we have, 50-some-odd cases in the United States that have been identified, given the national health infrastructure of this country is under the command of a man whose own brain may be nothing but a howling maelstrom of spirochetes himself. We don't know what that 50 number actually means. A little bit more factual data regarding the area downstream from the dam in California. Coyote Creek, San Jose, and Anderson Dam. Tom in San Rafael, sunny San Rafael, at least according to Shel Silverstein. Tom says, regarding the average income in the floodplain, that's Silicon Valley. My son's apartment is a ways off, but still between the dam and the bay. The median income in San Jose is something over $83,000. And the whole area is densely populated. Many of the streets are three lanes each way. These are every 10 blocks or so, just to get everyone to work and back. Yikes. That's a terrifying scenario. And so what we got to do is kind of cross our fingers that between now and however long it takes them to drain the dam after October 1st, that there aren't any 6.5 magnitude earthquakes a mile away from the dam, or any 7.2, or maybe that's backwards, 7.2 magnitude earthquakes right on top of the fault line. And that's about all we got. But getting back to the coronavirus, like I said, history doesn't repeat, but it does rhyme. Because we know, for instance, and this is not fear mongering. This is just history. Kind of like last night, you know, whenever we talk about the history of this country and the blood. Upon the innocent blood upon which it is founded, I guess that's jarring to some people, but it's true. And it's also true that, for instance, when the plague swept this planet beginning in the 1340s, well, it started in Asia. Fleas and rats. You know, they carry the pathogen. The flea jumps off the rat, jumps on a human being, bites the human being. Hello, plague. But they are. One of the things that I read today is that it's scary. There's no getting around the fact that it's scary. There are some 240 cases in the Italian peninsula in Italy. Two of the hardest hit areas are the Veneto and Lombardy. And when the plague came from Asia, it made it to Italy. In terms of Europe, first. And it came on a merchant ship that docked in Venice. And the historical echo of the fact that the Veneto has some of the highest numbers of infections in Italy, it couldn't help. But, well, it tickled my little brain cells. And not in a funny way. The Veneto is the landward side, if I recall my Italian geography correctly. The Veneto is the Italian side of the area where Venice, you know, the islands and the lagoon of Venice is. Venice is also over-visited by cruise ships. So it's entirely possible that the thing may have vectored into Italy just like the 14th century plague did. Aboard some sort of merchant vessel. In this case, a tourism cruise liner. Because we already know that a number of cruise ships were turned into floating petri dishes because of poor responses to all of this. And then we have to, and so that's the historical kind of sort of reference point. There's one hotel in Spain that's on complete lockdown. But I don't know if you saw this the other day, but it was a real kick the furniture kind of moment. The senior senator from Alabama is a turncoat by the name of Richard Shelby. Now, as I think I mentioned recently on the program, Richard Shelby has been in the Senate of the United States for rather a long time. He was the replacement for Hal Halpern, who was the Democratic senator from Alabama. Jesus, back when I was a little pimply-faced gospel DJ, 17 years old. Richard Shelby ran to replace Hal Halpern and won as a Democrat. And pretty much lickety-split became a turncoat and said, the scales have fallen from my eyes, and I realize I've been a Republican all along. I didn't leave the Democrat Party. The Democrat Party left me. Well, Richard Shelby sent out a tweet the other day. And it was a tweet of fulsome praise. A tweet of effusive gratitude. In which, and it was directed at the audience of one, you know, the God Emperor of the Republican Party. In which Richard Shelby said, "Thank you, dear Lord, Donald Trump, for not sending none of those filthy, diseased people with the coronavirus to the army base in our dear Anniston, Alabama." No shit. It's not a joke. It's not a bit. Richard Shelby, the senior senator from Alabama, actually thanked Nitwit Nero for making sure that somebody else was going to get them diseased Merkins. Yeah. Because, see, the Anniston facility of the United States Department of Homeland Security Center for Domestic Preparedness might have been a facility that had the wherewithal, the capacity to deal with what is now being called COVID-19. and in particular for passengers aboard the Diamond Princess cruise ship. And the federal government identified the FEMA center as one site that would be suitable and effective. But then said,
no, we won't send them to Alabama. Alabama loves me. We can send it to, maybe we could send it to, like, Boston. Or, you know, California.
Governor Kay Ivey, the woman who talked about how much life is valued in Alabama, issued a statement saying,
late Friday night, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services informed me about their proposal to transport Americans who have tested positive with the coronavirus, I never drink the stuff myself, from the Diamond Princess cruise ship to a FEMA center for domestic preparedness in Anniston. Sensing the urgency, I quickly informed the offices of Senator Richard Shelby and Doug Jones and Congressman Mike Rogers, as well as Dr. Scott Harris with the Alabama Department of Public Health. On Saturday appears the press release from HHS was inadvertently and perhaps prematurely sent notifying the state of Alabama that these individuals were scheduled to begin transporting to Alabama as early as Wednesday. Obviously concerned, there were a number of conversations between HHS, the White House, my staff, and me when I was sober, as well as two rounds of conference calls, including the senior staff of the congressional delegation. And by the way, I make that reference to when she was sober, because when she was running for governor and was getting primaried from her own side, one of the leading complaints about her was that, well, she wasn't sober very often. Republicans said that. I didn't say that. On one of the calls, they informed us that the CEP in Anniston is only being considered as a backup plan in case they run out of alternative locations. They assured us on both calls that no decision had been made to send anyone to Anniston. I made it abundantly clear that while the state of Alabama wants to work closely with this Trump administration to assist fellow Americans who may have tested positive for the coronavirus. I don't know why they couldn't drink that goddamn Dos Equis. There were some grave concerns about why the site in Anniston was chosen and how. I said grave concerns. Grave, goddammit. You understand this disease is terrible. It had not got no part and no business in Alabama. Jesus Christ, we don't have insurance worth a shit for most of the working people in this state. We're horribly underinsured because, see, we wouldn't have no freedom in Alabama if people could go to the doctor when they're sick and we had accepted all of that free, filthy Yankee money, what we'd done accepted lots of for everything else, but not to make sure people can go to the doctor when they're sick. While we want to work closely with the Trump administration, we got some grave concerns, you know, about people going into graves, about why the site in Anniston was chosen, and how logistically this would play out in the event this backup site was to be eventually activated. I'm grateful to Senator Shelby. He done sent out an email sticking his nose plumb up Donald Trump's big old orange hind end, so's when Trump yawns, you can see Senator Shelby back there in the back of his throat, just a smiling like a fox eating shit out of a wire brush. I am so grateful to Senator Shelby and his team for coordinating today's effort to send officials from HHS to Alabama to provide further clarity to this situation. Hello, clarity. I also appreciate Congressman Rogers for speaking with the president and informing him of the concern of the people of Alabama, what don't want no disease people coming to Alabama, because we can't handle it. Because, see, we didn't take the Medicaid expansion, and because of that, our hospitals, our little local community hospitals and shit here, been closing down and dropping like fucking flies, because we can't have none of that commie socialism money, what that one in our White House tried to force us to take some years in the past. Though these coordinated efforts through them, we will begin a process that will be transparent. And I don't mean trans like, you know, all that bathroom business. And hopefully find a solution of which we are united and comfortable with. Some of that, God damn it, what's that with doing on the end? I don't know, but that is something up with which I will not play.
You'll notice she thanked Mike Rogers and Richard Shelby as if Senator Doug Jones had absolutely nothing to do with any of this whatsoever. Yeah, right. Because, of course. Because party first. Because Republicans. And then the Alabama Department of Health, which was busy out gathering medicinal herbs and roots, said, for the coming disease outbreaks, said the Alabama Department of Public Health has learned that the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Yankees, has evaluated the possibility of using the Federal Emergency Management Agency Center for Domestic Preparedness in Anniston, Alabama, as a backup location for some Americans infected by the virus that causes COVID-19, also known as 2019 NCOV, or novel coronavirus. God damn it, we drink Bud Light down here in Alabama. HHS has stated that this is only a contingency plan and that there are no patients currently scheduled to be transferred to the Anniston facility. So please don't be getting your white robes and hoods out and your 2x4s and your kerosene and your gasoline to go and burn crosses in front of the facility in Anniston now, you hear? According to HHS, the FEMA center would only be used as a backup if facilities in other states, you know, Yankee states, are unable to handle these passengers. HHS is planning to meet today with local officials in Anniston to discuss this here plan. Americans were passengers on the Diamond Princess cruise ship who were evacuated by the federal government to the U.S. from Japan. And another attack on America coming from Japan. ADPH will release additional information as it is received from HHS. Now, back to our regularly scheduled gathering of roots and medicinal herbs. Because I think we're probably going to be getting fairly close to shrieking and panicking mode fairly soon. Because what the CDC said today, and not so much the CDC, but the National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases. Immunization? Botany Bay. Kitten, it was terrible. They put vaccines in our arms. The Dr. Nancy Messonnier, who directs the National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases, said, it's not so much a question of if this will happen in this country anymore, but a question of when this will happen. And said that the United States should sort of steel itself to the idea that it's going to get here, and it's going to spread
in communities all over the new 90 states of America. And that Americans should be prepared for disruptions. Dr. Messonnier said, we don't know if it's going to be mild or severe. But, quote, we are asking the American public to prepare for the expectation that this might be bad. Health and Human Services Secretary Alex M. Azar, who has no business in the job, speaking to a Senate committee, said this is an unprecedented, potentially severe health challenge globally. We cannot hermetically seal off the United States to a virus, and we need to be realistic about that. Yeah. And what Dr. Messonnier was talking about was preparing for disruptions of daily life. Schools closing. Businesses closing. Public spaces being vacant. You know, some kind of zombie apocalypse shit. Yeah. Meanwhile, though, you might recall that Nitwit Nero said it would be gone by spring because pollen in spring kills the coronavirus or whatever the spirochetes told him.
I think the whole situation will start working out.
That's what he had to say. Jesus Christ.
It'll start working out.
Yesterday, the stock market took a 1,000-point dump. And in India, the Wall Street Journal said, the Dow Jones Industrial Average dropped more than 1,000 points, its biggest point decline in more than 2 years. The yield on the benchmark 10-year Treasury note approached a record low, and gold prices climbed for the eighth straight session to a 7-year high. This, of course, means that if you tune into most for-profit media, especially, you know, Fox News, TV, Radio Rwanda, and the big talk radio networks, you're going to hear a lot of, buy gold now. There's never been a better time to buy gold. You rubes want to buy gold high, and then we'll knock the price down and clean your ass out. Buy gold now. Call 1-800-FUCK-ME. That's 1-800-FUCK-ME-WITH-GOLD. Fuck me with gold. That's what we do. 7-year high on gold. But Nitwit Nero said,
the coronavirus is very much under control in the USA. There are, like, less than 10 cases. We are in contact with everyone and all relevant countries. CDC and World Health have been working hard and very smart. Stock market is starting to look very good to me.
Is it now? Because it took another shit today, at last I checked. With a reminder from the 6th day of November, 2012, because there's always a Trump tweet for anything that the pathetic jackass says in real time.
If the Dow drops 1,000 points in 2 days, the president should be impeached immediately.
That's 500 points a day. It shit 1,000 points yesterday and something like 800 today. Let's see. What was the actual number? There it is. Oh, my. Dow Jones Industrial Average down 3.15%. NASDAQ down 2.77%. S&P 500 down 3.03%. Oh, well.
I think the stock market is doing great because I'm me.
Oh, yeah. Three % drop.
My, the precious little market certainly is nervous.
Jimmy in the Great Northwest says, Bob, the evangelicals are saying the Heavenly Father is not punishing man for something man has done.
Oh, give him a minute. I'm sure it's out there.
There's no doubt whatsoever that it's out there.
You know, it was probably the secular humanist homosexuals.
Yeah. So. And gosh, we haven't even gotten we haven't even gotten to the weirdness of the great big Bruga socialist commie freakout. But we're halfway through the program. Terrace with a note, subject line: California droughtin'. I just returned from a round trip on 280 between Hillsboro and Los Altos. A few parts were lush and green, but a shocking amount of the drive looked like desert, as if it was October instead of February. If we don't get some rain soon, and lots of it, the fires will be early this year. There's no rain in the 10-day forecast. A couple of COVID-19-related questions, Professor, says Brother Deacon Asa. How long before Trump issues a travel ban on the slant-eyed countries? 2, does this mean that Cocaine Mitch is going to divorce his wife any minute now? I know. Hell, meet a Brother Deacon. I know. But, yeah. They're gonna roast marshmallows over you, Brother Deacon Asa. No, I expect the absolute worst of the maggots. And by the way, Nitwit Nero did say that we'll probably have a vaccine in like 6 months. And then the sciencey people who make vaccines said, nah, it's probably more like a year and a half. Oops. But, you know, alternative facts, right? Sure. John Jubilation T. Cornpone Kennedy of Louisiana is getting pissed off. He said he can't get a straight answer out of the Nitwit Nero administration. And of course, my immediate response on seeing that headline was, you think? What are you, simple? Simple. But at least there won't be any of them going to, you know, Alabama. Right. So let's, and like I said, we're below the $900 mark. We're down to $895 to go to finish the week. God, that works out to about $450 a night between tonight and tomorrow night. That's grim. But $895 is where it stands to finish February. All help is good help. You'll be in good company with Lady B and Jack if you jump in this evening. And you know, every dollar that we take it down is a good dollar. What time does the pageant start tonight? I'm guessing, what, 9 o'clock? Who's got the coverage? I just can't be bothered to follow these pageants. Because I got over my fascination with professional wrestling long damn time ago. Okay, over to the phones. And to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, yo, Bobby, it's me. Happy Tuesday. It's me, Reggie, from Decatur, Georgia. And speaking of those pageants, Bob, well, more specifically, one of the pageant members, you know, Mr. Sanders, or should I say Mr. Bernard Bernie Sanders. And how do you feel about
that? That would be Senator. Yes, not Mr. Senator.
The Senator Bernard Sanders. And how do you feel about a certain MSNBC employee member, name of Chris Tweedyberg Matthews?
Well, if you'd been listening last night, I did about an hour on Chris Matthews, and so you know that you can go and check out last night's archive over at Podbean or
HeadOn.live. Well, I asked Randy the exact same question yesterday, and she said that he should apologize to Bernie Sanders live on television. Although I don't know if he'll do that or not.
Oh, he did it. Yeah, he did it.
Oh, he did it. Good. Well, he got his ass lit up.
I mean, it wasn't much in the way of a quality apology, but it was as close as Chris Tweedy Matthews was going to get, and it was apparently enough to save his sorry privileged skin with the suits at NBC.
Right, isn't he a neocon that used to work for Nixon back in the day?
No, Chris Matthews worked for Tip O'Neill.
Yeah, him. Didn't he used to work for him?
Yeah, that's not Neo. That's Tip O'Neill was a Boston Democrat.
Right. Well, isn't he a moderate or something? I know he's not a liberal or a libertarian. I could be wrong on that. I don't think he sounds like that, even though I don't watch the man. Because he's just too, I mean, he doesn't know how to do a talk show. You know, he interrupts people and then he asks them questions before he gets the word out. And they don't lose their concentration and train of thought.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Hey, Reggie, your telephony is really rough this evening. You're overdriving badly, and it's hard for the folks to hear you. So we'll try again another night, okay?
All right, Bob.
All right, you take care, Reggie. Yeah. All right.
Stay dry and warm.
Trying. All I'm worth. Later now.
Mm-hmm. All right, Bob.
Bye. It was just really, really difficult to. I think Reggie was on a different device. And Scott, what's up, man?
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
I'm among the living.
Put me in, Coach. I'm ready to play.
And I'm told CBS is one of them for the pageant this evening, and Megan tells me 8 p.m.
Yeah, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, and I've got my DVR set.
One of the things
that I loved about the way they were previewing the pageant this evening was when they would say, "Oh, well, you know, South Carolina doesn't have early voting. Everybody has to show up and vote on election day. So this debate is really going to matter." And I'm thinking, wait a minute, hold the fuck on. So you can't even scrounge up enough gumption to say that South Carolina still doesn't want everybody to vote who can possibly vote and doesn't want to make it easy for people to vote, and they'd far rather make it more difficult for people to exercise their constitutional franchise. Can't say that, can you, Joe? Or little Willie Geist or Mika or can't quite bring yourself to say that. How about that?
Well, here's the trouble with this. Pardon me. The system as it currently exists. One of the troubles is, let's say on November 3rd is what I think election day is this time. We don't have a national election on election day. We have 50, at least 50, if you don't count the territories and the commonwealths and all that. We've got 50 individual state-run elections. Now, granted, there are federal laws 50, regarding
50 little petty kingdoms. It's kind of like the Holy Roman Empire and the German principates.
Yeah, you know, so. Granted, there are federal regulations involving federal candidates on state ballots. I believe there are certain practices which must be adhered to. But by and large, when you're talking about the state offices, the county offices, the city and municipal offices, the ballot questions, you know, propositions and stuff, and the races for judges and sheriffs and stuff. It's all state handled, and they have, and it's the same goes for primaries in terms of the Democratic Party and the Republican Party in the states and also on the national level, deciding whether or not. See, I think that no matter if there is a Republican incumbent, that there ought to be Republican primaries. Now, that doesn't mean I'm going to run out and change my registration and go vote in them, you know. No, not unless I go completely batshit crazy. And from time to time, I can see it from here, but I'm not near enough to have gone over the fucking edge into the abyss. Come on, you know. But it's just a mishmash. It's a crazy quilt system that we've got, and it's no wonder it's rife with problems. I heard some asshat on the Republican side the other day, but why be redundant saying Republican and asshat? But be that as it may, I saw this guy talking to, I think he was talking to the guy on ABC this week in Washington or whatever there, Stephanopoulos.
Yes, this week with George Snuffleupagus, right.
They had some guy from the Republican side on there talking about, we don't want to infringe on anybody's right to vote. We want great turnout to occur. We want to safeguard the counting of the votes and the casting of the votes and all that happy shit. Well, I'd like to see some proof of that, you know, in scientifically measured.
Good luck.
Yeah, I know. And confirmable, verifiable status and data that these fucking voting machines and the ballot counting procedure and all that shit. Didn't Joseph Stalin say it doesn't matter who votes or doesn't vote, it matters who counts the ballots?
I don't know if that's real, but it is reported. And sometimes it's Stalin, and sometimes it's somebody else.
We need the integrity in the system, is what I'm getting at.
Right. The principle of that statement is that as long as you're willing to rat fuck the system, you can do pretty much anything you want to.
Well, sure. That's why it needs to be tightened up. Archie Bell and the Drolls, 1967, baby. Or 68, I forget which. Remember that song?
It's called the Tighten Up. Yep.
Tighten Up. Tighten Up. God, my mom.
I love that song.
Maybe I'm closer than I know to going over the sanity edge.
Well,
I don't know.
You know, and I got to ask you, there's this little crackle that comes with your calls. And I think, are you using like the Apple provided earbuds and microphone thingy?
Yeah, I'm afraid that's what I got.
Okay, well, I think I know what the cause is.
What is it? Tell me. I bought another set.
Well, you know, that little microphone dongle hangs down there and it often touches your clothes.
Oh, okay. Is there any? Let me see what I can.
Well, you can hold it. You can hold it out so it doesn't touch your clothes.
Okay. Well, I can do that. Why not?
Did you just do that?
Well, wait a minute. I'm putting the phone in my pocket, and in the other hand, hailing a taxi cab, Alanis Morissette, 1999.
Yeah, Brother Deacon Asa says, yeah, the microphone's rubbing against your shirt.
Well, okay. All right. That's, I'll hold it.
Yeah. That cuts down. That cuts down on the rattle and scrape.
Okay.
But don't apologize at all.
Wasn't that a song, Shake, Rattle and Scrape?
No,
something else. Right. Never mind. Go ahead.
And David in South Carolina, Stan, just pointed this out. The for-profit media will not mention all the Republicans crossing over to vote for Bernie. I cannot get any of them to estimate how many of Bernie's voters are from Republicans. Also, Bernie people attacked me just for asking this. It is happening here in South Carolina, and it happened in Nevada. Well, we know it's going to happen in South Carolina because people have been called upon to do it. The Republicans have admitted they're going to do it. They're going to go, and they're going to vote for whoever it is that they think they want to face, that they want to send up against Nitwit Nero in November. Because, this is just baffling to me, if we understand the structure of a primary, if we understand that a primary is an electoral replacement for a nominating convention, okay? Which it is.
Well, it's not a replacement. It's more of a mechanism to decide who gets to be in the convention.
Okay, I'll go with you there, but it is party specific.
Yeah.
Why, in the name of sweet fake baby Jesus, would you let the other party help you decide who your nominee is going to be? Because see, that's South Carolina. And so, over on the Republican side, you know, you can only vote in one or the other, but, you know, down ballot, and you make a choice, you know, do I really, really, really care who the county assessor is of Sister Fister, South Carolina, or would I rather go vote in the Democratic primary and just pick everybody that I want to see lose and materially affect the outcome of the primary? And Republicans being Republicans will opt for the rat fuck every goddamn time.
Well, again, like I was saying before, it's on a state-by-state basis. The states decide, and the parties within the states decide how primaries and such are conducted. Because I remember the last election that I voted in before I moved out here. I was living in Cincinnati, Ohio, and it was in the spring because I didn't move here till June of 2000. And I voted in the Republican primary. Apparently in Ohio, at least back then, no matter what your affiliation was, you could vote for either side or an independent or whatever in the primary. And I remember distinctly voting as the only one of the few times I've ever voted for a Republican in the primary in Ohio in 2000. I voted for John McCain simply because I didn't like the idea of George W. Bush being the Republican nominee. I mean, McCain has got troubles of his own in terms of reliability, or did back when he was upright and above ground. But in some ways, I was happier with him being in the running against whoever the Democrat was, as opposed to George W. Bush, because we know how that turned out later in 2000. Jesus, what a Donnybrook and madcap adventure that was. It ran like a month past Election Day, and it was ultimately decided on a 5-4 vote by the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yeah, but I'd like to back up to this process for a minute, because family story. When my father moved away from here in 1960, he was a voter in West Virginia, and back then in West Virginia, if you were a Democrat, you got to vote in the Democratic primary, and if you were a Republican, you got to vote in the Republican primary. And if you were an independent, whatever the fuck that actually is, you didn't get to vote in either one, because it is a party process for members of the party. So then dad goes down to Alabama, and they've got rat fuck primaries where you've got people going back and forth trying the craziest thing he'd ever seen. And it is. And it stayed that way in West Virginia for a while until, probably further back than I care to remember, we suddenly decided that we needed to take into account them precious, precious, precious independents. Because, that's the thing about being a member of a party. They don't send you a dues statement. It doesn't cost anything to be a Democrat or a Republican. Well, okay, if you're a Republican, it does cost you your human decency and your dignity, and probably about half of your IQ points.
Your immortal soul, if such a thing exists.
That too, without a doubt. But if you can't be bothered to check a damn box, why do you want to choose my party's nominee for me?
Well, I get what you're saying.
And part of that has to do, at least in a place like West Virginia, I mean, the numbers are terrifying. If you look at how we choose candidates here, let's take an off year. I think I remember one midterm election here, probably most of them here in this county, which is it's not a terribly populous county, but it's a large county. And we might have 16%, or we might have 38% voter turnout overall. And between Democrats and Republicans, let's just for purposes of analysis say that it's pretty evenly split. That means 19% of the eligible voters of each party went to the time and trouble of going out and voting.
Yeah.
Okay. So that means that let's say somebody wins 51-49%. That means that 9.75% of the eligible voters from a party chose the party's nominee. But it's not actually that. It's 9.75% of members of the party and people who can't even be bothered to check a goddamn box. And want to be independent. Well, if you're an independent, by definition, that means you have no business voting in a primary, because it's not for you. It's for people who have made a choice, people who have made a declaration. I mean, it doesn't.
Sometimes when we choose to do it, we can learn valuable lessons and get valuable tips from other places on the planet. I know that that is a rather un-American point of view, but I mean it does stand up to to reality that sometimes other places can tweak their procedures in such a way that it becomes more equitable and less vulnerable to tinkering and tampering. Are there any other countries who do voting in a... Because aren't there some Scandinavian countries that require, like, voting? Like, if you don't vote, it dings you on your tax return?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know about Scandinavian countries. I know voting is mandatory in Australia. Robert in Australia has told us about that from time to time.
Yeah, or maybe that was what I was thinking about. See, what I'm getting. Oh, and by the way, Reggie brought this up, and I meant to mention it at the top of the call. At the top of last night's Hardball Monday night, Chris Matthews did offer I guess the bare minimum as determined by the staff and management of MSNBC News or MSNBC's head honcho. He gave the bare minimum requirement apology or acknowledgement that he had spoken stupidly, you know. But anyway, yeah. But what I was getting at in terms of voting, the system as it currently exists in this country is rife with problems and opportunities for rat fucking and other nefarious activities. What gets
well,
me
right,
about
and,
the pundits,
and just to reinforce your assertion. David in South Carolina stands, says, fake Dems. We even have Republicans running as Democrats in the state Democratic primary in South Carolina. Adding, rat fucking is an art form in this play in this state due in part, large part, to Lee Atwater.
Oh, God. He was the prince, the dark prince of rat fucking.
Yep.
There was a documentary about him several years ago, like 8-10 years ago. Maybe a little more about Lee Atwater. I forget the title, but I know you've seen it because we've talked about it before. If you ever get a chance to watch that, Horn family, watch that. It's like a higher education course in rat fucking and what comes of it and what's possible with it. But yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, no, I mean, like I said, reinforcing. Jack in Shreveport said, every time you can get a state-by-state rat fuckery, every time you can get something passed down to the states for a decision, you, Republicans, can use national sums of money to influence a state-sized election. Presto, easier to manipulate.
Technical point of order, is my crackling any better? I found a solution.
It's gotten much better.
All right, because what I did was I took one of those little clips that you use, that you press the two things together, like, you know, to hold papers together.
Yeah.
And I've put the cord onto the side piece of my eyeglasses.
It's made a considerable difference.
So hopefully that'll help.
As long as that little white piece that's the microphone isn't rubbing clothing, you're golden. And I need to send out a thank
Maybe
you. I need to send out a thank you here. Big thanks to Samson. Samson just got us down to, where were we? Down to $820. Thank you, Samson, very kindly. And I just had a note from Dave, who caught the frontier burp and beat Brother Deacon Asa to the draw. In honor of the cacophony that was Friday's show and the first two calls today, a $20 call Bob with a working headset challenge. And thanks Scott for not making for figuring out how to keep your microphone from scritching on your shirt. So there's a $20 challenge on the table.
I'm glad you mentioned it.
And that challenge would take us down below $800, which is tremendous, more than I can express. So if Dave's challenge is met, that would mean. We would get down to 780. So if there's somebody out there with $20, Dave will double it in honor of a generalized call for working headsets.
I've got
no scritching.
I've got a couple of remarks about the virus, the coronavirus, and also a few words about dams and floods and catastrophes.
Damn virus.
But before I do that, I would be terribly remiss, and I'm going to keep this on a closed circuit sort of basis without going into any exquisite detail, but just take a moment to mention my deepest appreciation for an unknown member of the Horn family who did me a definite solid in the past couple of days, a tip of the old guru's turban in your direction, sir or madam. You don't know what a lovely gesture and surprise it was, and B, it just reaffirms my understanding, my knowing, and my knower that this Horn community is aces. We not only do our political discourse in an intelligent, caring way, but just how we show up in daily life is a testament, if not to clean living, to just having heart and soul and empathy for one another, you know? Not even if you know them, even if you don't know them. You know, it's that kindness of strangers thing. And it just blew my mind, I'm telling you. You could have knocked me over with a pin feather. And I know that a lot of the people listening are saying, well, what the hell is he talking about? Don't worry about it.
Well, no, it bears repeating because it is everything that you said it is. It was a warm and decent and touching reminder of the fundamental kindness of this community. You mentioned the other night that you were on the verge of going down to the pawn shop to hawk your beloved older Kenwood stereo to pay for your damn meds.
Well, that was only part of it. I was going to go down the street and around the corner to the pawn shop and get $30 or whatever the guy's offering for this old Kenwood receiver, which was a freebie to me when I moved in here. And I got other furniture besides, including the chair I'm sitting in as I speak. And I was going to say there will be some left over from the meds because they jacked up my copay on one of them. And it had been a while since I'd sent in any bucks to the Horn to keep this work going. And it was something I mentioned in passing. And you said, no, don't do that in terms of a contribution to the Horn. But someone heard that and took it to heart.
Oh, a lot of someone's heard it.
And did me a solid. I mean, there was no requirement to do that. Most people, the best they, and I'm not talking about this congregation, but some congregations, given a similar opportunity, the best they'd be able to muster would be a
thoughts
few
and
insincere
prayers.
Thoughts and prayers.
Thoughts and prayers. You know?
But we fucking show up, whether it's keeping the Horn a viable going concern or doing something for another human being, whether it's another member of the congregation or just someone that they cross paths with in their daily encounters. And please know, whoever it was, it made a difference, a discernible, measurable difference, you know, and maybe it was a reminder to me too. Wasn't Glenn Campbell? Didn't he do a song called "Try a Little Kindness"? I know there were other versions of it, but when in doubt, try a little kindness, extend yourself, and I'm pointing to me too when I say that. You know, you will never know. Not in a case like this, because you get positive feedback about it and a report, but more often than not, in these instances of extending yourself and impacting positively the life of another human being, or a dog or a cat or whatever, in a lot of those cases, you'll never know what a difference that makes and the ripple effect that arises out of that or results from that. You know, it warmed my heart.
Well, I'm profoundly glad, and I'm glad that it did the job that it was intended to do.
Now, by the way, there's always a downside. Dealing with PayPal and getting access to it, because I stopped using PayPal about a year ago because of the flaming hoops one must jump through to do the smallest little change in the lineup. Well, I won't even go into that. But needless to say,
it got there, and that's what matters.
Got there, yes, yes.
And you know, I mean, I'm a soft touch for people in need. I can't tell you the number of times that I've dug into my pocket, and this isn't about aggrandizement or patting myself on the back. It's more about other people. I can't tell you the number of times I've dug into my pocket to find a single or a fin or whatever, and given it to somebody who's told me their story, and then to have someone next to me or around me say, "You know, he's just going to use that to go buy booze or drugs, don't you?" At which point I look at them and say, "What the fuck business is it of mine?" If that's the case, and that individual gets a few moments of peace, a little tiny bit of solace in an otherwise horrifying existence that would crush you, what business is it of mine?
Yeah, because
it's one of the problems with having unfortunately, religious upbringing. I managed to get shed and clean of most of the tomfoolery and the mummery and the humbuggery and the general 200 proof bullshit that flows like a mighty goddamned river through the religion industry in this country. But, you know, there are some things in the teachings of the great religious avatars of this planet where you go, wait, that's got some resonance to it, and Matthew 25 is one of those places. If you've done it unto the least of these, you've done it also unto me. And I think it's probably replicated in most of the other great and not so great and less known faith traditions of the planet. And so... Well, like today, I stopped and spent the last money that I had in my pocket to get a bag of ice, because I like to have ice in my water bottle here at the program. And a guy hits me up, and I felt like shit. Because I literally did not have a penny in my pocket. Whereas usually I'll just dig in and say, you know, here and, you know, go with the universe. But it bothered me. It bothered me. And David in South Carolina Stan says, self-medication is the only medication some folks have access to. Not saying this is good or healthy. It's just the state of healthcare in the USA. And while I was clowning around with Kay Ivey's statement down in Alabama, the fact of the matter is, rural hospitals are closing at terrifying rates, especially. In those freedom-loving Republican Confederate states, where they couldn't, you can't force us to take your free Yankee money. And they that was the pretense, but the idea was, we can't let everybody down here be able to go to the doctor when they're sick, then they'll start be they'll be starting to think that, you know, they're people just like us.
Well, and you say a freedom loving area of a freedom loving state or whatever, it's the freedom to get sick and die, and or the freedom to, once you're knocking at death's door and you realize that you got to get somewhere and seek treatment, you have the freedom to get in the car and take the perilous trip for an hour to the nearest facility who can address whatever it is that ails you.
If you know, you know your, if you've got something that can be addressed.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I was getting at when I interjected this this notion. This country is probably, it's not even probably, it's certainly less prepared to deal with a pandemic virus outbreak than China was, than South Korea.
This is what I'm wondering.
Certainly less, less able or capable or prepared than Italy.
My grandmother Katie, on my mother's side, my maternal grandmother, who apparently was exposed to some degree the 1918 Spanish flu. I believe it was called the Spanish flu. That epidemic, it went from pandemic to epidemic, I believe, worldwide. Millions died as a result.
It's epi and then pan.
Yeah.
Pan means all. Pan is a Greek root word meaning all or everybody.
Well, whatever the degree of spreading was in 1918 with the Spanish flu, in little old Alexandria, Virginia, just 4 miles south of the nation's capital, and I guess she would have been an adolescent or maybe her 20s by that time. She was exposed to this thing and apparently got ill to some degree, but survived it. But then you fast forward to the 1940s when my mom and dad were dating. And my dad, for years after, would say, your grandmother Katie has been dying since 1918, because she was a bit of a hypochondriac. Unless, of course, she wanted to take a multi-state bus tour up into New England, into Canada, across Canada, down into Oregon, Washington, and California to Los Angeles and go to a taping of the Lawrence Welk Show. I swear to God. And that was the highlight of her life, meeting Lawrence Welk, the champagne music maker himself. Turn on the bubble machine, you know.
Oh, please, please let Guy and Ralna have had a big production number then.
Oh, God, yes. But, yeah, that was, I mean, and she talked about it until the day she died. She didn't get to dance with him because, you know, sometimes he would go out into the little dancing area just off of the studio audience where members of the audience would get up and dance to a particularly bouncing number, you know.
And he would and he would dance with the little one or two of the little old blue-haired ladies, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. She never got to be one of the blue-haired ladies to dance with the maestro, but she certainly got to say hello to him. And boy, it was like a teenager today meeting whoever the teen pop singing idol is in America. You know, you got a Scotchgard, the seats in the auditorium.
Ah, Jesus, wait a minute. Okay. There's a very small jingle for Scotchgard, the seats in the auditorium. I've got a much bigger jingle for Jack in Shreveport.
Okay.
Practicing the art of word knowing. I sure would like to know where that stink bug went that just sort of flew past my ear. God, I hate him. And you know, that tells you what kind of winter we've had here in West Virginia. The stink bugs are already on the move.
Yeah.
God. I remember being in a motel room near here, and Agnes and I counted 112 stink bugs.
Oh, Lord.
And it's not because they don't clean the rooms. I don't care how wealthy you are, you've got stink bugs if you're here.
Yeah. Yeah.
and one flew into one did not fly over the cuckoo's nest. One flew into my little propane heater here the other night, and about preempted the fucking show.
That's burning stink bug.
But
smell.
Barbecued stink bug is not a happy smell. I don't care. Propane, hickory, don't matter. Jack in Shreveport practicing the art of word knowing. We were talking about the difference between epi and pan, and pan is a Greek prefix meaning all. Jack in Shreveport notes that epi is a prefix of a Greek root that means expensive, as in EpiPen. So, yes.
Or Epicurean.
Yeah, so cowbell for that. And thanks. Thanks going out. We're making progress. Dave's challenge got met. Thank you, Ralphs, and thank you, Roberto. And so that took us down to 780. And then Roberto went on and took us down to 765. This cipher makes my little noggin ache, but 765. So we're making considerable progress, and maybe we can actually finish the month of February to the good. That would be, or to the even, actually, that would be tremendously helpful. Thank you, Roberto, and thank you, Ralphs. Robert in Australia notes China put a 1,000 bed hospital in 10 days. Could the USA do that? Could Australia? And I think the answer, at least where the United States is concerned, not just no, but oh, hell no. I take that back. We might be able to do that in the United States if some hedge fund dickhead could figure out a way to build the hospital, make a killing off of building the hospital, run the hospital, and then sell the hospital to another hedge fund dickhead who would then fire everybody and shut down the hospital.
Skipped a step. Oh, he's got to also have his name somewhere on
Yes, the Murgatroyd Q Dickhead Memorial Hospital. Right, without a doubt. Because that's how they teach business at the Harvard Business School. Yeah.
Well, this leads me to one of the things I was calling about, this coronavirus. What is our best estimate this early on by responsible and knowledgeable experts in terms of how fast this thing could potentially move and what the time frame is? Because I'm thinking of two major times when you don't want to be afraid or prohibited from going out. One would be the national convention in Charlotte, North Carolina, of the Republican convention, and the other would be the national convention in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, of the Democratic convention. But the other time that I'm thinking about is in November, when people, if you don't have voting by mail, have to actually leave their homes and mingle with others to cast their vote. What is the forecast in terms of the impact, potentially, in those two time frames? Because that could throw a big fucking a wrench into the machinery of our democracy.
You said our democracy. Couldn't it?
Well, you get what I'm saying, yeah. What is perceived to be our democratic system.
Yeah, the republic, the union.
Yeah.
The potential is tremendous because one of the news stories I've read today, one of the things that I read was that there's going to be, and this will cause a shit hemorrhage, there's going to be a shortage of masks.
Yeah.
Because everybody's going to want a mask.
And some of these masks are not, you may as well just put a napkin from Arby's over your face.
Well, like I said, just remember, surgeons and nurses in operating suites don't wear masks to keep from getting sick from the patient. They wear masks to keep them from contaminating the hopefully reasonably sterile field of the operating theater and the operating subject.
Yeah.
Okay.
And be like that episode in Seinfeld where they're up in the gallery. And Kramer accidentally spits a junior mint into the surgeon's incision of the patient. Wasn't that where that was?
I think so. And of course, in the early days of surgery, at least early 20th century, every surgery was an opportunity to teach more doctors, and surgery and operating rooms were literally auditoriums.
Yeah,
they were like gladiatorial pits, and you wheel the victim, patient, into the operating room, and you've got all of these young white guys with pens and pads and sitting there in Edwardian dress suits and hanging on every word from the noble surgeon who's sitting there basically murdering the patient before their very eyes.
Yeah. Well, where's my C and Skeet? The squirrel just showed up.
Leave the squirrel alone. Remember, we're cutting back on extraneous broadcast noises tonight.
Well, I'm sorry. I got to step out and leave a few nuts for him. Come on, here you go. Now take that one from me, and I'll put these others down here, okay? Then I go back in and talk to Bob.
Oh, you're still talking to Bob.
They get one in their mouth, and then they look at you like, hand me another one. Or maybe two or three while you're at it. Greedy little fuzzy-tailed bastards. But I love them. Anyway, I'm sorry. I went off track there.
No, that's okay. You just reminded me of something. I feel horrible. The other night, I was running an errand, and I was not driving fast at all. I wasn't even driving the speed limit. And a rabbit, apparently, rabbits run in like the 7-year waveform cycles population wise, and it looks like we're on the upside of the pop because they're all over the place right now.
Well, they do breed.
And this one was sitting on the side of the road, and he was looking at me, and I was slowing down, and I was looking at him, and I was like, don't.
Yeah.
And he waited until my wheels were right there and went, then I can beat it. And I jumped on the brakes, and I managed to miss him with the front wheels, and I crunched him real good with the left rear wheel. And I was trying so hard not to, and I'm like, damn it. Oh, found the stink bug. Sammy, the studio stink bug, is now crawling across my iPad. God, this is disgusting. I feel like I'm in some sort of prison movie where, we race the cockroaches or something. But I leave them alone because I don't want the perfume. And I don't have...
Yeah,
I don't,
you kind of actually give them a wide berth.
It's 68 degrees in the Fabulous Horn Studio this evening, so there's no propane going, so we don't have to worry about a stink bug barbecue. Ugh. Blah. Blah.
So, anyway, does anybody know what the timeline is and what the speed of this progression is? Because...
The entirely incompetent Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services said, well, it's not like you can build a force field to keep out a virus. And like I said, even John Jubilation T. Cornpone Kennedy of Louisiana said, you're the secretary. You're supposed to know these kind of things. Yeah, how's that whole acquittal vote working out for you there, John, buddy? Yeah.
Yeah, but see, this isn't the first virus that we've ever had to contend with. Flu is something that is almost as constant as the four seasons. And I don't mean the singing group. Every year there's some strain of flu or another which runs through the population. And I have never once had a flu shot, believe it or not. And some people say getting to be the age that I am, that I'm a fool for not doing it. But I had the flu in the I think it was the late 50s, the last flu that one of the first flus that I can recall got that bug, and I was just violently ill quite some time until, you know, it eventually passed. So that one, in terms of the immune system, if that one ever passes through again, my chances are better than average that it's not going to bother me, because I have the, what would it be, the antibodies or the immunity built in now. But these other ones, these later ones, the various Asian flus and the they put numbers and letters and different designations for them. You know, I've never had a flu shot in my life. So I don't know. Maybe I'm being more foolish.
Yeah, you're being a little cavalier, buddy.
So
you were asking about spread and breadth and depth of this thing. The country with the highest death toll outside China is Iran. And Iran has had 12 deaths. It is in Afghanistan, Bahrain, Iraq, Kuwait, and Oman as well. Spain, Italy. Italy has 7 deaths and over 200 cases. They've locked down 11 towns. Police are manning checkpoints to enforce a blockade. And Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte has said that residents could face weeks of lockdown. And so that's why the official here in the U.S. has said said, you know, we need to be prepared for significant disruptions of civil life.
Well, that's where my question, that's what prompted the question about November. If it does get to be, you know, noticeable to any great degree, could that be something that you-know-who could use to keep us all indoors as a public safety measure, so according to him?
Sure, sure. And there's one other thing that needs to be sort of brought into focus, and that's this. He asked for basically $2.5 billion for so-called vaccine research. And it's hard to say no. I mean, Chuck Schumer came out and said, nah, he actually needs more money than that. And he responded saying,
well, you know, that's just crying Chuck Schumer. If I'd asked for that much, the do-nothing Democrats would have said it's too much.
You know, we're dealing with a potential pandemic with a 2.5% mortality rate. And here's the thing. And to the entire Congress, I would say, and to certainly, well, no, the Congress isn't listening, but to the members of this community, I would say, what makes you think he's going to actually use the money for vaccine research? My best guess is if he gets his hands on $2.5 billion, stand by, a sneeze coming.
All better. Sneeze.
It was a series.
He probably diverted to the wall.
Yes! Ding! You win the booby prize, Scott.
I don't want a booby. I got a booby.
But why wouldn't he? And by the way, I'm sorry. Dave noted, and Brother Deacon Asa noted, we just buffered up and quit again. Dave pointing out the 9th best internet company in Beckley, West Virginia, just kicked you. That's happened. I think that's the 3rd time tonight. But we're back. We're back. But what's to stop him? I mean, think about all the other things that he's diverted money away from to build that stupid fucking wall. That stupid goddamn wall. That dumber-than-dirt wall.
Well, this thing about this, see, now, like I say, I don't.
Yeah, or he could just insist that all the vaccine research be done at that tacky-ass pile of bricks he made out of the old post office building in Washington, D.C.
Well, and I remember it many years ago when it was, oh, God, it was a decrepit-looking structure held together by pigeon poop and smog deposits, carbon deposits on it. Sat there for years. I believe the old FBI Washington field office was in that building. Because the back before Metro, the bus service and later the subway service, there was the AB and W bus company that served Northern Virginia. And it could come into D.C. and leave, you know, pick up people and leave, go back into Virginia. But it couldn't pick up passengers other than that in D.C. or travel to stops within D.C. other than on its direct route back into Virginia. God, that was years and years ago. And then they combined D.C. Transit, AB and W, and whatever the suburban Maryland bus service was into what we now know as Metro bus and then later subway. But see, this is what disturbs me, getting back to this thing about possibly summoning up a real sounding but still false, quote, emergency in November to keep people home in November and keep them from voting if they don't have voting by mail like we do in here in California and a lot of other places. Because the thing that gets me about the pundits vis-a-vis Bernie Sanders is, you know, we're parroting one another, echoing one another. They kept saying there's no possible way he can win and or be nominated until he began winning and was beginning to make the march, like who went through Georgia, General Sherman, you know, the march toward the sea, you know, headed for Milwaukee, Bernie is.
Well, the mayor of San Francisco is London Breed, and
is he falling down? No, wait a minute. That's
London Bridge.
Yeah. Never mind.
Sometimes this Never is mind. Like. Sometimes, honest to God, you and I are like Bob and Ray, only not nearly as funny. He's issued an emergency declaration for the city. In a statement, London Breed said, although there are still zero confirmed cases in San Francisco residents, the global picture is changing rapidly, and we need to step up preparedness. We see the virus spreading in new parts of the world every day, and we're taking the necessary steps to protect San Franciscans from harm. Dr. Thomas Aragon, the San Francisco health officer, also said, given the high volume of travel between San Francisco and mainland China, there's a growing likelihood that we will see cases of COVID-19 eventually. Most people who are in self-quarantine at home are eager to cooperate and understand the importance of these actions. We are prioritizing children, people who live in congregate settings, and vulnerable populations as we plan to reduce the potential for harm from the virus in the community. We've been working closely with the Chinese community, who are so impacted by this situation, also at risk for stigma and discrimination.
Well, you see now.
Oh, London Breed. London Breed is apparently not a he. London Breed is a she.
San Francisco.
Don't know.
Is actually an example of having learned from a previous, if not debacle, serious mishandling, back during the AIDS epidemic, the earliest days of AIDS in that city. The big controversy was whether to close the gay bathhouses or not. Do you remember reading about that?
Oh, yeah.
Or hearing about that?
And you know, there's shameful shit already happening. For instance, recent.
But what I'm saying is, it sounds like San Francisco is taking a more responsible approach in terms of its city health people. And I'll bet you the state of California, by and large, is too, except for those little pockets of our state that are bright red. And believe it or not, we do have those out here.
Oh, I know. Sparky has spoken at length about the state O. Jefferson. But the shameful shit is already beginning. And, of course, no surprise that recent Medal of Freedom winner and guy who keeps a woman in a pit, the oxymoron Rush Limbaugh, would try to jump out in front to make this as disgusting as possible and to stigmatize the disease with every fiber of his being. And so, yeah, stand by. Here we go.
Because this is confidence. This is strength. This is a presence on the world stage. And the Democrats, again, just don't have anybody who can match up. And in the bites that we have here, Trump deals with the Democrats and the coronavirus, goes after Justice Sotomayor, for those of you in Rio Linda. And he really has gone after these two judges on the Supreme Court, that they need to recuse themselves from these immigration cases because they are taking open public political positions on these cases. And he's right about it. So here's the first bite.
You may ask about the coronavirus, which is very well under control in our country. We have very few people with it. We think they'll be in very good shape very soon. I think that whole situation will start working out. A lot of talent, a lot of brain power is being put behind it. $2.5 billion we're putting in. I see that Chuck Schumer criticized that he thought it should be more. And if I gave more, he'd say it should be less. It's automatic, you know, with these characters. It's just not good for our country.
Now, I want you to pay attention to something Trump said here. Very well under our, very well under control in our country. We have very few people with it. The fatality rate is something like 80,000 cases in the world that are known. There have been 2,700 deaths. Do you know what that translates to a fatality percentage? It's like 2 to 3%, folks. The fatality rate of this virus is less.
Yeah, it's like 2 or 3%, folks. But here's the thing, as I pointed out, the fatality rate on the flu is 0.1. So that's a pretty high mortality rate. But
it's
more,
twice,
but more, but
it's
moreover,
twice the mortality rate.
Twice? No, no. 2.5% for coronavirus. 0.1 for flu.
Oh, point.
So a lot more than twice. But you know, this guy, my God, what a disgusting, pathetic, putrid example of an attempted member of the human species. The Democrats are trying to make the coronavirus sound worse than it is. Let's finish the stupid fucking clip.
Less than the flu. Far less than the flu. But look at how...
No, it's not far less than the flu.
It's been hyped, and it's being hyped because, as you heard in the first audio soundbite, the montage, the media thinks this is the new Russia. This is going to get Trump. This is going to... They're gleeful. They're happy. This is going to destroy the economy magically by November.
I don't think there's going to be any magic involved, but if there was ever any doubt that this man remains, this thing remains a disgusting, hateful piece of shit, hopefully we're past it. Oh, and by the way,
well,
Darlene in Connecticut says, hey, Scott, Scott's hilarious. So, yeah.
What do I do now?
Something that tickled Darlene's funny bone.
See, that's the weird thing. Sometimes I don't know when it's happening. Sometimes it's deliberate. I will craft a certain phrase or whatever. Now, slathering, what did I say earlier? Slathering, see and ski on the squirrel and me?
Yeah.
that definitely does have possibilities. That one came out of nowhere, Bob. That came just strictly out of whoever's in charge of sending funny things to my head, travel down each of my arms to my fingertips as they dance across the keyboard of life. You know? So, but whatever I said, Darlene, I'm glad you enjoyed it. I will sometimes listen to old air checks from the 1980s of radio work that I've done and just literally crack myself up from something I've said, having no conscious memory at all of that moment, okay? And just wondering, where the hell did I come up with that nugget of funny? You know? I don't know. It's a gift. What can I tell you?
Well, if you want to know
why I'm not doing this on a station or a network or something somewhere is beyond me. Maybe I'll figure out a way to do a podcast, but I don't want it to be up against this show. You know, maybe we ought to figure out a way to get a progressive network going. Something other than Sirius XM.
Been there.
Yeah, I know.
Done that.
I know, but maybe the timing wasn't right. So just like Air America, it was too early, too soon, and the backers were not the type of people that you'd want. But that's another story.
Well, there were no backers.
Have I got time?
Well, hang on. Steve in New York says, Russia's source of information. Al Franken used to say that Russia's source for his information was his butt. The more things change, the more they remain the same. And so, you know, just to provide as much information as possible, Agence France-Presse, a reputable source of news, at the World Health Organization headquarters in Geneva, Bruce Elward, who was the head of an expert mission to China, said they'd done a decent job there, but he said in the rest of the world, countries simply are not ready for reining in the virus. You have to be ready to manage this at a larger scale, and it has to be done fast. And he says, you know, poor countries are particularly at risk, and I think it goes without saying that poor people are at more risk. And hey, people without access to the healthcare, to anything in the way of healthcare, are horribly at risk. And so, we're not ready, because see, we're not a great country anymore. We're a country that can't even make sure that everybody who gets sick can go to the doctor. And this country has lived for so long in such a pampered state that we have no functional idea of what we could be in for. Because, see, maybe it's not this one. It's Rick talking to Ilsa at the end of Casablanca. Maybe not now. Maybe not today. Maybe not tomorrow and for the rest of your life. And it may not be this virus, but there is one. And it's out there. And so if you want to get an idea of how much of what this will look like if it does get loose in the United States, and according to the experts, it's not if, but when. Well, there's a history that can be accessed. And all we have to do is transport ourselves back to the heady days of 2014, when we actually had someone competent in the White House, but we also had Republican governors like Christie, and we also had then private citizen Donald Trump. He said the CDC was being dishonest. Ebola is much easier, and this is February 25th, 2020. Ebola is much easier to transmit than the CDC and government representatives are admitting, spreading all over Africa and fast. Stop flights. They couldn't control their own labs a month ago. What would they know about Ebola? If you look at the AIDS epidemic, it started very small, and then all of a sudden it grew and grew, and we have to and we have it to this day, a massive problem with that. And then when Barack Obama appointed an Ebola czar, he said, it's the wrong person. Do we need more people? Do we need more bureaucracy? And then he said, why would anybody trust our government to handle this crisis?
This coming from a walking petri dish in chief. Come on. Give me
and American citizens who had been infected, he said, we can't allow them back into the country. They just can't come home. And we're talking about doctors and nurses who had gone to try to save people. Now, on the other hand, so when he did that about Ebola, and now he's sitting there saying, oh, we've definitely got it under control. Definitely, definitely. The virus is moving slow in the driveway. How brimming with confidence are you?
And I'm pretty, let me go back in culture, film history, not too far back. And I'm pretty sure it was regarding Ebola. But whoever has seen the movie and the band played on, based on the great
book. No, that's HIV.
Was it HIV?
Yeah.
I thought that the initial scene in that movie had to do with Ebola.
Somebody in the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department will take care of that lickety-split.
Okay, well, the point of it is, you know, back then, in terms of the actual AIDS virus and the AIDS situation in this country, we had a similarly minded, which is to say empty-headed, unknowledgeable president-in-chief whose principal function apparently was denial. Or minimalizing, at the very, to put it in a better light, though it doesn't deserve that. We had Ronald Wilson Reagan, who I don't believe uttered the word AIDS until he was out of office, and by that time it was 1989. You know?
Yeah.
So I mean, Trump, he's not an authority on anything. He's a goddamn buffoon. Underwritten and you know, if you look behind him, you can see Putin's hand going up his Trump's back, moving his mouth, you know, like the great ventriloquists from the Hollywood Palace back in the 60s. I don't know. I just it's just frustrating as hell, and that's why we need to keep our powder dry and our focus clear and our efforts strong, because we cannot permit this man another 4 years, because we will have entered into the darkness for a long, long time, affecting the next generation and maybe even further into the future. And people have told me, well, you know, you get a little bit overwrought when it comes to Trump and, you know, the Republicans and all that. But I've been around long enough to where I know how they operate. This vendetta that he's engaging in the wake of the impeachment, okay, and in the firing of a bunch of rather capable people in various places in military and government recently, someone brought up an example in recent history, and if you look online for the September 15th, I think, 1972 transcript of a Nixon tape between John Ehrlichman and John Dean in the Oval Office, somewhere in the verbiage, Nixon says, "Well, you know, we haven't used the power yet," you know, in reference to his perceived enemies. Well, this guy is even way worse than Nixon, Trump is. And he's just chomping at the bit to use the power, as Nixon put it, against media, against people in his own fucking government, in the military, calling the generals twerps or whatever he did not long ago. I mean, the list is endless. The list of particulars against this guy is endless in terms of his insanity, his ineptness, his incompetence. The fact that this man is the fucking chief executive of the United States of America is a slap to everybody's face. And we just cannot let this man be reelected. That Indiana Jones movie where the old monk at the pivotal scene tells him to choose wisely in terms of which one was the chalice of Christ.
Yeah, that's the temple, Last Crusade, and it's a knight, a Knights Templar.
We must choose wisely. I've got one quick thing, just as a reference.
Well, let me just share this with you because Lady B and Jimmy both chimed in. Scott, it wasn't about Ebola. When AIDS was first discovered, Lady B says, they thought it may have been transmitted from animals to humans. There's a similar theory going on about Ebola, that it came from monkeys. So that's probably what you're confusing. And the band played on in fact about the AIDS epidemic.
Yeah. I know the book and the movie are about the AIDS epidemic, but the very first scene in the movie has to do with Matthew Modine, who is a health professional who is working on behalf, I think, of the UN someplace in Africa in an effort to stem Ebola. I'm almost positive that was the start of the story. And then he comes back to this country.
No, it's a 1993 movie.
Yeah, I know.
Ebola wasn't the Ebola thing was 2014.
It's a flashback to an earlier time. I'm almost positive. I could very well be wrong.
In this one, I think you are, because the film was made in 1993. And the Ebola crisis was in 2014. So you can't have a 1993 flashback to 2014.
All right. I will take everybody's word for it. But I'm going to watch the movie tomorrow.
Anyway. By the way, Megan says, subject line, butt plug Trump. Boy, does Trump have a lot of criticism for a man who actually did his job from another guy who does absolutely nothing at all. And that's the absolute truth. Meanwhile, Arthur says, stop greed Dr. Frist shaming, Bob. Yeah.
I've got one more quick thing, and I won't go into the details, but earlier you were talking about that perilous situation with the millions and millions of gallons of toxic sludge just waiting for the dam to fail, whatever surrounding it, keeping it back from the valley and all those people. When you get a chance, you and members of the Horn family, Google the following words, Baldwin Hills Dam Disaster, Baldwin Hills Dam Disaster. It concerns a dam south of Los Angeles in the neighborhood of Baldwin Hills in 1963, 11 days before Christmas in 1963, when a reservoir dam failed. And it didn't kill a huge number of people. There were some, like 100 and some, 200 and some, but it was... In terms of figuring out why the dam failed, it took them 7 years to figure this out. Fracking was a fairly uncommon method of extracting oil in 1970, 7 years after the dam failed. It turns out that the effects of fracking and the subterranean impact of fracking from injecting that solution down in there to get that oil to come out to enrich already wealthy people in the oil industry apparently played a significant role in undermining and causing the dam to fail, the Baldwin Hills Dam. So check that out.
Yeah, and
Baldwin Hills Dam disaster.
Interesting the way things work out here. Last night, Agnes and I, and it was just on a whim, I clicked
Chinatown?
On, no, I clicked on I clicked on Slapshot, which is probably one of, if not the greatest sports movies of the 1970s.
Kurt Vonnegut?
No, not Slapstick, Slapshot.
Oh, Slapshot, I'm sorry.
Paul Newman. Paul Newman.
I'm confused this afternoon, friends.
Paul Newman. And it's a tremendous script. It's a script. It's about a minor league hockey team in an imaginary town called Charlestown, somewhere in the Rust Belt, where the factory is closing. It's a magnificent, and it was directed by the same guy who directed Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid and The Sting.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And it's grittily realistic.
George Roy Hill, I think.
Long before Bull Durham, or Major League. There was Slapshot, and it's a masterpiece. It really is. It's one of those that didn't do so great at the box office, but it became a cult classic. And of course, you know, just like all cult classic films, it has its reference lines like, "What are you doing? Putting on the foil? Want some?" And it was actually based on stories coming out of a minor league hockey team named the Johnstown Jets. Johnstown, Pennsylvania. And if you want to talk about massive dam disasters, the Johnstown flood, the Great Flood of 1889, May 1889, catastrophic failure of the South Fork Dam above upstream of Johnstown. That was, it killed 2,200 people.
Yeah.
And the thing is, that was only 14.55 million cubic meters of water. So if you multiply that by 3 to get cubic feet, you get the idea. But
even a relatively small amount of water channeled into a more narrow focused area.
Well, the article on it points out that for a time, those floodwaters were had a flow rate and general size that was greater than the Mississippi River.
Yeah, and the Mississippi is a powerful fucking river.
Greater than the flow rate of the Mississippi River. James, so you could be right about "And the Band Played On," because James reminds me Ebola was first discovered in 1976.
Stephen New York
says, "And the band played on opening scene. In a prologue set in 1976, American epidemiologist Don Francis arrives in a village on the banks of the Ebola River in Zaire and discovers many of the residents and the doctor working with them have died from mysterious." Okay, so you're right. It was Ebola. And it was a flashback to 1976.
That's the one that causes you to bleed from all pores and all orifices, isn't it, Ebola?
It's a hemorrhagic fever.
I'm pretty sure.
It's a
hemorrhagic fever. Because that's what the
patient was
exhibiting in terms of, I'm sorry, you blocked out there.
It's a hemorrhagic fever.
Yeah.
And it's a horrible, horrible, horrible way to die.
Yeah. And God bless all of the people who deal with solving these problems. You know, their funding ought to be quadrupled. I mean, good God, in 70 or 71 or 72, Nixon declared war on cancer without even having anything in terms of a, quote, army to go up against it. And we're still, I mean, we've made tremendous progress with certain cancers in this country, but there's still a good ways to go. There's never not going to be a health malady that can wreak havoc in the country and the world.
Well, and we're never really going to get cancer under control as long as we continue to pump the things into the world that cause cancer to happen.
Well, yeah, that too. It's a multi-pronged approach to stem
look at the fact that There's no disagreement now in the scientific community about the effects of microparticulates, ultra fine particulates. They just cause havoc whenever they get inside a body.
Yeah.
Whether it's mountaintop removal or
cigarettes.
Diesel exhaust. The particulates released above frack pads. But the thing is, go and ask the EPA what their standard is for ultra fine particulates. No, don't. I'll just answer for them. They'll tell you there ain't one. The only particulate standards that the EPA has are for PM10 and PM2.5. Ultrafines are less than 100 microns. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And there's no standard. And if you were to try to get EPA to delineate a standard for ultrafines, there would be a national conniption by manufacturers, polluters, hydrocarbons, etc.
Oh, yeah.
Because they, you're going to shut us down. We're not going to be able to do no business anymore.
Jobs.
You know.
But I'll close on this. The thing about these viruses and having people on standby ready to spring into action is not unlike fire departments, because my dad was a fireman. And they had to be there at the firehouse 24 on, 24 off, okay? Whether, you know, just waiting, doing something around the fire station, to be there for when the bell rang, to go out, no matter the weather, no matter the time of day, to save structures and people alike against the ravages of fire. Well, we've got to have that same mindset. Now is not the time to be cutting budgets and scaling back. And this virus hopefully will not wreak total havoc on the population here and abroad. But it has the potential to, because that's what viruses do, you know? And you cannot be short-sighted, is my point. And these fucking Republicans, they never miss an opportunity.
To miss an opportunity.
To be short-sighted, yes. They never miss an opportunity to miss an opportunity. This is why we need to show them all the door in November. Just wave goodbye, pat them on the back, thank them for their time, and know in your heart of hearts that
give them a laurel and hearty handshake and an apple and a roadmap.
And they'll find some, you know, lobbying group or law firm or some place to land. Fear not, they will find some place to land to wreak their havoc in some other way, but not at the public expense. You know? So that's my epistle for today, children. Now let's stand and sing One Toke Over the Line, Sweet Jesus.
Brewer and Shipley, ready? Damn it. yes, and so ends the reading from the first epistle of Scott. Have yourself a good evening, Scott. You take care now.
Sometimes known as the Book of Twerp. Anyway, yes, Bob, thank you, and thanks again for the opportunity.
And the third book of Floppy Shoes.
Yes, to make people laugh, make people think, and stuff. Because if I couldn't do that, what would I do? I'd be out there stealing cars or selling dope or something. So it's you've helped reclaim my otherwise drab and wretched life.
Or doing something decidedly dirty and immoral, like, you know, being a preacher.
Oh, yes.
All right. Later, Scott.
We are the Tootie and Muldoon of National International Radio.
If you say so.
I'll let you figure out who you are.
Yeah, say goodnight. Say goodnight, Gracie.
Goodnight, Gracie.
And that's Scott calling from San Diego. I covered some ground tonight. Felt good about it. Never got around to the whole socialist, commie, bruga. But I imagine we will probably get enough of that to last a goddamn lifetime. Right now in the pageant that's starting down in South Carolina, Stan,
Yeah. I don't know if I got the stomach for it. Probably have to take one for the team. Yeah, well. Thanks, everybody, for helping keep the program on the air. We got things down to $765 this evening to finish the week. That's pretty damned inspiring, and thank you, all of you, who jumped in to do that. Thank you so very much. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room earlier. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.